grande. I'll give you a few minutes notice. And how is Matthew? In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essential book of spiritual life, spoken by Krishna himself 5,000 years ago, we find that Arjun, who is a warrior, he is in a very difficult situation. One could say he's in an impossible situation. And the impossible situation is that he has to deal with his family members and fight with them. He has to fight with his own family members. Now, there is a circumstance behind the battle that the Bhagavad Gita takes place on, and that is written in a very, very, very large book called the Mahabharata. And the Bhagavad Gita is also part of the Mahabharata. And this Mahabharata, it tells a very complicated story of many ancient dynasties of ancient India. And it's full of all kinds of intrigues. And it's filled with many good instructions to improve our character in this world. Nowadays, people people like to hear about other people. Naturally, we like to hear about others. And we have heroes, so many heroes in this world. But usually, the heroes that we have in this world, why are they heroes? Because they're very wealthy, or because they sing very well.
But these heroes, when we meditate upon them or think about them and consider them our heroes, what naturally happens is we follow their example. And when someone is proclaimed or gets the fame of being a hero in today's world, their character, the actual qualities that they value in life are not taken into consideration. Just the fact that they sing well, or they're sports persons, or they're one thing or another. But their character, their integrity. What's the Hebrew word for integrity? And what's the Arabic word for integrity? What is it? Integrity is so important in life. But this isn't taken into account when the heroes in contemporary society, the heroes are sort of more or less anointed. Integrity, character isn't taken into account. But in the Mahabharata, what this incredible story of ancient history, of ancient India, so many moral instructions are given through exemplars, persons who exhibit perfect character. But then, more or less at the Mahabharata's end, Arjuna, who is a warrior, is placed into a most difficult predicament because he has to do something that's very difficult, but superficially, on the surface, it appears to be of a lesser character. He is supposed to fight for the kingdom, as warriors tend to do, who is going to rule the kingdom. But in this particular case, he has to fight his kinsmen, his family members, who are on the opposing side. And he comes to the conclusion, at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, that I don't want the kingdom. I don't want the kingdom. Better I just leave this battlefield. I leave the battlefield, and even if I just become a beggar, it's better than having to win a kingdom at the cost of the lives of my family members. So from a simple moral point of view of character, Arjuna's decision seems to be exalted. It seems to be wonderful because he's detached from achieving things in this world at the cost of harming others. So on one level, he's doing the most wonderful thing. And in general, always, for a person of integrity, selfishness is condemned. To do things just for one's own selfish motives is condemned. But in this case, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself, who is the supreme personality of Godhead, he says that Arjuna should fight and not give up the battle. He should do something that ordinarily would be condemned, fighting with one's family members. Ordinarily, that will be condemned. And to do it, to gain a kingdom, condemned. But Krishna he wants Arjuna to fight. And Arjuna, he can't do it. He finds himself unable to do the right thing, the correct thing, even though he knows it's correct. And sometimes we also find ourselves in this position that we know what is correct, we know what is the right thing, but we don't find the strength within us to do that right thing, to act on the highest level. So to help Arjuna come to a higher level of consciousness, the highest level of integrity, actually, Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita, and he explains the philosophy of the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And the first essential point that he makes, which is the foundational point of the Bhagavad Gita and the foundational point that spiritual life is based on, and it's exactly the opposite of the foundational point that material life is based on. Spiritual life and material life are in opposition to each other, in fact. Although one can practice spiritual life in the material world, and practically one has to do that, and also one can practice a shadow of spiritual life and have a material consciousness. But the two, spiritual life and material life, are in opposition to each other. And the basic first reason that Krishna gives Arjuna as why he should do his duty, he's a warrior, and why he should participate in the battlefield. He points out into this assembly of warriors who are ready to charge at each other. He points to them with Arjuna at his side, and he says, never was there a time when you did not exist, nor was there ever a time when all these warriors you see before you, there was never a time when they did not exist. Nor was there ever a time, Krishna says, when I did not exist. Nor in the future will any of us cease to be. And with these words, and Krishna will say it even more directly, he says it a little more, even more directly in very soon after this, he explains that in essence, who we are is eternal souls. We are not, in other words, the body. And this is the difference between spiritual life, in essence, spiritual life and material life. In material life, we consider this is me. And in spiritual life, we see beyond the externals, and we see the life within the body that actually gives life to the body. Raise your hand if you've ever seen a dead body.
Human
body? Yes, okay, or any kind. We'll broaden it. But raise your hand if you've ever seen a dead body. But then I'll turn the question around and say, have you ever seen a live body? Now, what's the difference between a live body and a dead body? Has anyone in this room ever seen a person who is alive but very ill and close to passing from this world, close to dying? Has anyone ever seen that? I've seen that. Oh, so many of you. Has anyone ever been in the presence at the exact time when a live body changes into a dead body? Has anyone been in the presence of someone at that time? It's most astounding. Because in one moment, someone who is a body that's alive, full of life, turns into something no more alive than this table. In one split second, What happens? What happens? To know the answer to this question is, practically speaking, the beginning of spiritual life, that we are eternal. And we have an eternal life that's beyond the life of the body. And after Krishna points to the vast army in front of Arjuna, and he says, you have always existed, I have always existed, and each and every one of the people in this army who are before us, they have always eternally existed. Obviously, not in the same physical way, but eternally existing. Right after Krishna explains that, he also explains a very simple example that is extremely powerful to help us understand that we already know that we are not our body, that we are eternal. And that example is, just as a person passes in this life from boyhood or girlhood to youth to middle age to old age, and throughout all these different changes of bodies, the person remains the same. I am the same person that I was when I was 5 years old. I am the same person that I was when I was 12 years old. I am the same person that I was when I was 20 years old and 30 years old and 40 years old and 50 years old and 60 years old. There's the person, me, has not changed. My body has changed. My mind has changed. My intelligence has changed. But the person, me, has not changed. And spiritual life means living a life based on you being eternal. And trying to realize that, who you actually are. And material life means to live a life based on this being me. This being me. This being me. And what is the result of living a life like more or less everyone in the whole world does, thinking that this is me, that this is me? What is the end of me then? The end of me, if this is me, the end of me is death. But just, Krishna explains, this is wrong, this is incorrect, this is a misidentification. Just like if I have a new car, does anyone here have a very, very new car? Probably not. And no one would admit it anyway. A new car, so proud. My new car, and I'm driving it along, and I want everyone to know how wonderful my car is, and they should see who the driver is. It's me. And then I'm trying to get pleasure from the fact that I have a new car. It's just like trying to get pleasure from my body, and that's what everyone is doing. Everyone considers their body to be the source of their pleasure, and trying to somehow or another manipulate the world to get pleasure from the body, from the body. But here I am driving in my car, and according to the Bhagavad Gita, it's the same as me driving my body, actually. I am eternal, and the body is temporarily me, but I am eternal. And I'm in my car, and I'm driving my car, and I'm making it go this way, and making it go that way, just like I'm making my hand go up here, and my hand go here, and my knee go here. I'm driving this body. So I'm driving my car, and suddenly, some foolish, stupid person bangs into my new car. Have any of you ever been in that situation? You. Well, you feel pain. If someone bangs into your new car, you feel pain, as if he hit you. And that's what you do. You jump out of your car, you start yelling at him, "You hit me!" But actually, he didn't hit you. You and your car aren't the same. You and your car aren't the same. Myself and my body are not the same. And I'm driving this. And this body is such an amazing vehicle. Did you ever consider what is the connection between the thought process, hand rise in the air? Now, how does that work? Something as simple as that. How does it work? Hand rise in the air, go to the right. It's quite amazing. And there's no strings either, I promise you. Hand on top of the head. It's amazing. Well, how does it work? Just by saying it. Hand scratch my chin. How does it work? Just by thinking something, I want my hand to rise. How does the body rise? How does the hand rise? What is the connection between the mind and the body? What is the connection between me, the soul, me, the eternal, and this temper? How did I, if I'm eternal, how did I take my birth in New York City, for example? Why? Why did I take my birth in this particular family situation, country, with a particular shape to the body? Why? So, spiritual life begins by asking these questions. And even before that, it begins by asking, trying to understand, what is life about? What is the purpose of it? Is it just to try to enjoy myself as much as possible, to control as much as I can, to accumulate as much as I can? What is the purpose of life? That is the facility that human life offers. It's that kind of intelligence that I can ask these very difficult questions. Yesterday, while I was walking in the forest outside, the moon was shining so brightly. And usually you see the moon and it's the moon. But I just thought, it is quite amazing when you think about it, that it's just hanging there in the sky. I mean, the lamp isn't hanging there in the sky, the book isn't in the sky, but the moon, this huge ball, is in the sky, and it's just hanging there. So if you ask the scientists, they'll tell you some reason why it's there, and the law of gravitation, and the Earth is doing. And it, not only is it hanging, it's always facing in the same direction. So the scientists will say, well, we know why it's hanging there. Why? All you scientists out there, why is the moon hanging there? The law of gravitation is making it hang there. Okay, but that doesn't answer the question. Well, why is the law of gravitation making it hang there? You know, who's making the law of gravitation make it hang there? Well, it happened because there was a big explosion at some time, and it makes things, laws of gravitation that makes things hang in the sky for no reason and always face in the same direction. It's quite mysterious. But actually, to tell you the truth, until yesterday, when I looked at the moon, I never asked this question, what are you doing? Why are you just there? And I never noticed it before.
Because we go through life, at least I go through life just expecting, just saying, well, this is what life is. But I don't ask deep questions. Why is my, what gives my body the ability to move the hand up just by thinking it? Where does this, who, what's going on in this way? And why is it that all my attempts, all my attempts to find a situation that I'm longing for, the happiness that I'm longing for, why have all my attempts failed? And why have the attempts of everyone, I could think, well, it's because I'm only 20 years old and there's still 60 more years or so to be successful in my pursuit of happiness, but no one else has. Why? Is there something wrong with the way people are thinking about life? Thinking that, like everyone else is thinking, that the moon is up there because it's there, and I obviously this is me. One time, many years ago, I was dressed like this, and I had gone to Japan. I was in Japan. This was a long time ago, and I was dressed like this, and one U.S. Army man saw me in the airport. I still remember it, and it was 40 years ago. And he said to me, I don't have to do what you're doing because I know who I am. So I said to him, okay, who are you? And he said, I'm me. Oh, really? Well, I'm me. Well, who are... I didn't. I know better than to argue with U.S. service army men, so I didn't. So I didn't say it, but I was thinking, well, that doesn't mean very much. That's not... Who are you? Who are you actually? Who? And 40 years later, who are you? If you're still me, the same person 40 years later, and your body has changed completely, and now you're very old and you can't move this way and you can't move that way, then who is that me who you are? If you're still the same me, but your body has changed, well, who is that me? And then, what is the relevance, what is the importance of knowing who I am? What is the importance of that to my life? Who am I? Well, these are important questions to ask. And these are the beginning of spiritual life. To ask questions, who am I? And what is the purpose of my life? Is it possible? Is it actually possible for me to find the depth of happiness that I long for in a very, very changing world? Is it possible, if this isn't me, as I hinted before, then if this isn't me, then who am I? Or if this is me, just temporarily, this is me. Well, who am I eternally? Who, if I'll still be me in 40 years from now, who will I be? And what happens at that amazing moment when there is a live body and one time I was with one Hare Krishna practitioner, and his wife was, she had cancer, and it was very, very difficult, and for the last few weeks of her life, a lot of us were around her trying to support her. And then
The doctor told us, it was in a palliative care unit in Australia. The doctor told us that she had less than 24 hours left. And we stayed up all night with her, all of us. And then she was still there the next morning, completely weak, but still there. And some of us, we decided that some of us would go to our place, which was an hour away, and just rest a little bit and then come back. And others would stay. And soon as we got to our place an hour away in Melbourne, we got the phone call that she had gone. So we got back in the car and rode back to the palliative care unit of the hospital. And this lady, her name was Govinda Dasi, as soon as her husband saw me, he said, "Now I have seen it. Now I believe it's true." He had watched, he had been with his wife, holding her hand at the very moment she left. And in that space of time, that person in that weak body who was so ill was gone. It's one thing to theoretically know we're eternal, but at that point he said, "Now I really have seen it." At that moment, it's gone. The life, and everyone cries, but the body's there. Why is everyone crying? If we are the body, if she was the body and the body is still there, why do tears naturally come to everyone's eyes? And the reason is because the person that we love, the person that we knew, has gone, although the body is still there. The person, the life, that which was lovable within the body, the person I loved, is no longer there, although the body is there. So is it the body that we love? And how superficial or deep are the relationships that we have amongst ourselves? We like this person, we don't like this person, just on the body. But if the life leaves and the body is still there, then how superficial are we living our life? We're talking to people, but not even talking to them at all. We're interacting with people, but not interacting with them at all. And then that also brings up a very interesting question that naturally comes. If the body is there, alive, because the soul is there, and then the soul leaves, the life leaves, and the body is still there, well, where does the soul go? Where does the life go? And if we're living our life not knowing where we, the eternal part, go, and just trying to waste time, so to speak, trying to find pleasure from the body, which isn't us, and then have you seen that moment? Have you been with any patients at that moment? What is your realization? Just what you actually have seen?
I think one was in life, then in moments I see there's no conscious. And, before that, it was symptoms of terror and fear. Then all these symptoms go wrong.
Why is there terror and fear?
Philosophical question?
No. Why do you what? No. Why do you think there is terror and fear? Because not philosophically, but from the point of view. Of course, you don't know what it. You can't ask them. Why were you afraid? But because they're gone already. But why do you think that the terror and fear is there?
Because they want to be in life.
They want to stay in the body, and they cannot. And they don't know where they're going. And that's frightening, because this is all you know. It may be broken, but it's all you know. Your car may not drive very well, but if it's your only car, the only way to get around, you don't want to give it up. So there's terror and fear, because suddenly everything is out of your control and you don't know where you're going. And there's pain, a lot of pain. And it's, I don't want to give an unhappy class like this, actually. This is Friday night. Everyone should be having a good time. Sorry. I was just trying to make the point that we should ask deep questions. And spiritual life is very important. What life means, spiritual life. And these questions do have answers, and it's possible to get realizations, deep realizations of these things. It is possible. So I'll just stop here right now and ask if there's any questions or comments. Yes?
Could you say a few things about the other direction, about how the moment the soul gets into the body?
You mean why the soul goes into a particular body?
You talked about the moment, everything you said was, you talked only about the
leaving.
Yeah, but I think...
I was trying to make the point also that the leaving means that you will go somewhere. And that's the point that you're asking about.
You can elaborate.
Yes, I will try.
Some inspiration.
Well, according to this is directly what Krishna explains in the eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, with the words yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram tam tam evapti kanteya saratat bhava bharata. There's a rule, a law, that explains that, and also adishtayam manastayam visha upasevate. What fills your consciousness at the moment that you're leaving will determine your next birth. So it is not that every person leaves with terror. Some people who have a very deep spiritual life leave with peace, because they place themselves in the hands of the Supreme Lord. And some people are filled with worry. Oh, I wanted to do this, and what's going to happen to my investments? What's going to happen to this member of my family or that member of my family? There's a lot of worry. So depending upon what fills our consciousness, that will determine our next birth. So then the question comes, what determines what fills your consciousness at this very important time when we're leaving the world? And the answer is how you live your life. If you live your life with so many regrets, you know, you've done so many bad things, and I don't care. But at the end of your life, you will care. And if you've lived your life in a very good, pious way, that will also determine. Yes?
Is getting into a new body painful, or that's so... I mean, this amazing moment, that there is nothing, and then I think it's the same, no? Like,
you mean birth?
No, not birth, like conceiving. The moment that the soul gets into the
body. But at that time...
Oh, but is this... does the soul want it?
He's pushed by the forces of nature into a body that's suitable for the kind of mentality that he's developed. But at the moment of conception, there's no pain, because the soul is basically unconscious at that time. But then at some point, the soul is there after like 7 months or so. He comes to consciousness.
7 months.
Six, or I can't remember the exact. Yeah, he's conscious, and they start kicking and stuff like that. They're not comfortable in there. And then and the birth process is so painful for the mother, and also it's painful for the child. He's suddenly forced out, or she's suddenly forced out. Forced out, and then everyone knows what the first thing is, first reaction. Welcome to this world. You start crying immediately. What a welcome party. So, yeah. But it's the soul, and then you go through the same process again. And then everyone smiles at you. Cool, cool, cool. Isn't it cute? And then you go through the whole thing again. Have you ever noticed that even a baby dog is cute? Every baby is cute. Kitten, a dog, everything. A bird. When I was in Vrindavan a few days ago, we were by the river Yamuna, and there was a big tree. And in that tree was a little hole. And in the little hole was a baby green parrot. And he was so cute. And the mother and father parrots were by the hole of the tree and bringing grains of rice and everything and feeding him and everything. He's in the hole, and then every once in a while, and little red things around his eyes. He's so cute. But he's going to one day be an old parrot, and then one day he's gone. But a human being has an opportunity to ask intelligent questions about why is this going on, and what is the purpose of life? And is it possible now this eternal soul is living in the realm of matter, but what is the life of an eternal soul living in the life of eternity? Human life is meant to ask questions, intelligent questions. Is that okay? Did you have a question or comment? Okay.
How I can know that this is not only a story and not stories, and not how can I know that you are right?
Okay.
And maybe because of we are afraid for unmeaning life. We build stories to protect ourselves.
Yes. But so far I didn't tell any stories. I can tell lots of stories, but I didn't tell any.
Internal life.
But you think about it yourself. What's your earliest memory in this? How old were you?
I'm almost 62.
Okay, but what's your earliest memory?
4 or 5.
Okay, what were you doing when you heard your earliest memory?
Playing outside.
Okay, where?
In the yard, outside.
Okay, and who were you with?
And?
Who were you with?
With my dog.
Your dog? With big or little? With the dog?
Small.
What color?
Black.
Okay. What was your dog's name? Not to get too personal.
No. Ditsa.
Gitsa.
Ditsa.
Ditsa. Such a nice name. Okay. Let me ask you a question. Was that you?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. How do you know that it was you? That's not just a story. Now, if I saw
if you ask me, I said yes.
Okay. Good enough. Now, if I saw a picture of you, then, and I saw a picture of you now, would I say, this is you?
You need the imagination.
No, but you didn't take imagination. You didn't have to imagine it.
No.
Because you know it's you. Yes. So what is the you that hasn't changed through your going from being a 4 or 5 year old boy playing with Tita, black Tita, doggy. Something hasn't changed, but certainly your body has changed, and your mind has changed, and your intelligence has changed. But the you, the part of the whole package that's actually you, has not changed so much that everything else has changed, and you say that was me. So it's a matter of thinking about these kind of things, and you can believe it because I say it, you can believe it because Krishna says it if you're that kind of person, or you can think about it and see if you really, well, who am I? If this is me, but how, if this is me, then how is that also me?
No, I agree that this is not me.
But there's something that is you. And who is that you? That's what we want to know. That's what life is meant for. To ask those kind of questions. So we answer it that you're eternal, you have an eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and you should live in that relationship. So we have our answers, but you should begin with what you actually can fathom with your intelligence, and that's that you, this is not you, and if this is not me, well then who am I? And what is the purpose of my life? If this is me, then my purpose is all has to do with this. Eating, feeding it, expanding its pleasure. But if it's not me, then what is my purpose in my life? So, like that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Honest question. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes.
Does the soul have the ability to choose the body, or it's just forced to get into it? Like, I mean, does my soul, why my soul choose this shape of my body and the material world?
Yeah. It's not that you sit back, the soul, the eternal soul, and thinks, what kind of body would I like to be in? No. The soul, in this world, he's thinking, this is me. And according to how he's lived his life in this body and what fills his mind, that determines by the laws of the Supreme and by the laws of nature, that determines what body he will enter in his next life. So if there are instances of very, very wealthy people who have no friends and have no relatives, and they leave all their money to their to their pet cat or something like that. It's happened. So they have no one else. Their consciousness is filled with that. So that will fill their consciousness at the time of when they're passing from the world, and then they can actually take that kind of a body, a cat body or a dog body. And even before I started this chanting Hare Krishna, anything, I knew, I always thought that everyone knew it, that at the moment before the moments at death, your whole life flashes in front of you. Did you ever hear that kind of a thing? Does everyone know that or? Yes, your whole life. So when your life flashes in front of you, it's filled with so many things you like, your attachments, and the things you don't want, and the things that you're attached to, you'll hold on to. And that will fill your consciousness. So it's very important to become attached to the right things, because there's consequence. If one's consciousness is filled with hatred for someone, you end up taking your birth. It's ironic you take your birth like that. So what do you think? What do you think?
I think it's just forced to get into the body.
Yeah. But how we live our life now will will determine our consciousness in this life, and then that will determine where we go after. So there is choice, but the choice is now. It's like, yeah, the choice is now. So it's very important how we live our life. To live it in a good way, asking intelligent questions. And living in a good way, and a spiritual way. And that takes a lot of transformation of the heart, because this world, the way that the world is, in general, it creates within everyone a tendency to be greedy, to be lusty, to be angry, to be envious. Just that's the way that the world is going nowadays. So if you want to be actually a good person, you have to more or less go against the world. I mean, yeah, you have to be strong, and you need good friends also. To be good, you need good friends. One time, I was present when one person asked my teacher, Srila Prabhupada, how do you become sincere? Do you know the word sincere? It's a very difficult word to define. How do you say it in Hebrew? Sincere? Arabic? So one person asked the question, how do you become sincere? And Prabhupada replied, how do you become a drunkard? If you want to become a drunkard, associate with people who get pleasure drinking, and it will happen to you very quickly. And if you want to become sincere, you have to associate with those who are sincere. So association is very much at the heart of the process of making our consciousness, our heart, good or not good. Very much depends on who one associates with. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Good question. Any other questions? Yes.
هل العلم والمعرفة والثقافة إلى علاقة بالعلم يكون روحاني أو سبحاني؟ هذا أول سؤال. السؤال الثاني.
I'm the only person in the whole room who couldn't understand. Huh?
Spiritual or not spiritual?
There's material knowledge, and to get material knowledge, one gets material education. You can get material knowledge and become an MBA.
Every child who is born is potentially spiritual. I think he's spiritual, but the life changes
him. هل بكون يعني شخص روحاني ولا تدشت أو شو بدنا بالفيديو يكون روحاني؟
If we leave the child after he was born for 30 years in one room, shall he become spiritual?
Not if a tiger is in the room with him. He's very alive.
He's very alive. the person who went outside, he has seen the bad things, the good things, he has seen life, he has got education, so he can discriminate and become spiritual. And that person who was stayed in this room closed, what chance does he have to become spiritual?
If, may I try to answer your question? Everything depends on association, basically. If a person stays in one room, two things happen. One is other people will come into his room and will influence him. And the second thing that will happen, he will be there with his own mind, and that will influence him. And it's not like someone has a mind with nothing in it. Our life, every child isn't innocent when they're born. It's like a seed. A seed will turn into, when it grows, it will turn into something. When you first put this, you look at a seed and you cannot tell what it's going to turn into when it's just a seed. But in time, it will turn into one thing or another, one kind of a plant or another. So each of us, each and every one of us, there's not two people in this room who look exactly the same. There's not two people looking the same. None of us are wearing the same clothes, exactly the same, not the same face, styles and everything like that. We have our individuality. And that individuality includes our spiritual and material tendencies. Some people have a natural tendency to do bad things. And other people have a very natural tendency to do good things. And usually there's a mixture amongst people. Some people have, like we were speaking, we mentioned this morning that there's one Western composer of symphonies named Mozart. So he wrote his first symphony, elaborate, complicated musical composition, by the time he was 4 or 5 or 6 years old. Now, how is that possible if he's coming into the world blank? It's not possible. He's obviously carrying something from a previous life. I mean, that's the easiest, most obvious explanation for it. His mind is filled at the time of his last death. He had developed some skill, great skill, and his mind was filled with so many compositions. Then he passes away, he dies, and then he takes his birth and it starts blossoming. There are child geniuses. How is this possible? And similarly, I remember I had certain tendencies when I was very, very, very young. Some of them were not very good, and some of them were better than the not good ones. So we don't come into this world blank. That's one point. And the other is that very much according to who we associate with, that's going to affect how we grow. Even a mango tree, when planted, if it's not in good soil and there's many, many weeds around it, or an avocado tree, unless it's taken care of properly, it can die at a young age. So that points to the responsibility of parents very much to care for their children, not only materially, but put them in situations where they get proper good association so that their better side can come out. No. Did I answer the question at all? Or close to it? I bet you have many questions in there inside too.
It's all related, yeah.
It's all related. I was thinking the same thing. Any other questions? One more question, and then we'll end for the evening with a little more chanting. Yes.
Sometimes we feel that when we go in a specific place or any place on earth, you feel like you were here before.
Yeah.
Is that related to the soul that left before?
It can be. It can be that it reminds you of a previous experience that you've had in this life or a previous life, but it could also be of it could remind you of a mood or a feeling you had from a place in this life too. It could be either way. I know the first time I went to Vrindavan in India. Have you been to Vrindavan? No, why? Next soon, maybe. But I remember I didn't have the feeling that I had been there before, but when I was leaving, just after I was there for 2 weeks, I got, without any prior thought, I got into the bus, and suddenly I thought, what am I doing leaving? Why am I leaving? Out of nowhere. I was so surprised. But I left anyway. And that happened every time. Until I moved there. That's not exactly what you were saying, but I know that came from something previous, not just from... Because there was no reason why it would have come from what I had experienced during that first visit. It was something previous, and it wasn't in this life either, because I had no experience even similar to that in this life. Do you sometimes have that experience?
Yes.
That you many, many times?
No.
And it's something that just happens. You don't think, yeah. Thank you. Okay. So let us take prasadam. Time for eating. Eating yoga. And then we can talk more. Is it time for prasadam, or should we?
We can go on 15 minutes or something.
Yeah. But I know that it gets really boring if someone talks for too long. So I thought I'd stop myself before everyone stops me or something.
Maybe we can chant.
Oh, we can chant. Yes, that's a very good idea. Thank you. Why don't we sing a little bit? But we should open the windows too. Otherwise, there will not be any air. Is you just standing here? No. Is there anyone else who can play it better than me? Okay, we'll try that one. Do you know how to play mridanga?
No, unfortunately.
Shramananda, can you play a bit? Second mridanga? Gopal, give your father. So this type of meditation that we do is a meditation on sound vibration. So what's important is, while we're chanting, is to listen and try to become absorbed in the sound vibration. It sounds simple, and it is. If you can do it. Otherwise. So, it takes a peaceful mind to be able to do it.
Thank you.
יושבים בשורות.
Thank you.